Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, James Proton. Every week I will be sharing the experiences that have defined my journey and talking with people who have their own powerful story to tell. It's about doing better and being better in life, business, and all things in between. The Visually Inclined can catch us on YouTube, or you can check us out on just about every podcast platform. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. Our guest today is my good friend, Jessica Tui. Jessica, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'm very excited. You got a heck of a journey you've been on with professionally, in particular. I mean, how have you done all that stuff, you know, and still be a young woman?
Oh gosh, thank you so much. I already love you. No, I have been blessed to have many professional opportunities, done some really interesting work, done a lot of fun work. I had a great family who my parents raised me to look for opportunities and to take advantage of opportunities. We were chatting before we started about the importance of education. Mm-hmm. And for my family, that was just a huge thing. Be educated, read, ask questions, go out and meet people, go out and do things. And so a lot of my professional opportunities, I do that. As a former newspaper reporter, nosiest people you're ever going to come around. Reporters are curious, mm-hmm. and I love that about people. I love smart people who ask good questions. And so I had an absolute blast being a reporter. That morphed into political campaigns, so I went to the dark side, the other side of the notepad, and you know, so now I was a reporter, and then all of a sudden I'm like the enemy on the political
deflecting
campaigns.
Report.
Yeah. But that was phenomenal. It's a different type of questions that you ask when you're on a campaign. And then after working in politics for a while, so I ran communications operations for U.S. House and Senate races and then worked on Capitol Hill in D.C. between campaign cycles. Wow. And I worked for some really great, really solid members of Congress. And so a couple of things that I learned from that, there are very good people in D.C. on both sides of the aisle. They have very good ideas. The political parties disagree on how to achieve the goals. But we have the same goals. We want our country to succeed. We want our country to be prosperous. We want businesses and individuals to succeed. Mm-hmm. We want to improve education. We want a clean environment. Both sides want that. They have different ways of going about it. But what we've seen lately is that instead of being able to sit down and have those conversations, ask the questions of the person who disagrees with your political ideology, it's become very very personal and very negative. Yes. And so you get people who are interested in sitting down and having reasonable conversations. They're just fleeing for the hills. They don't want to be part of it on both sides. And that's really unfortunate.
It is.
So
I agree.
And I was one of those people. I went into the private sector. And then about a year and a half ago, I moved to Pittsburgh. So I got out of that D.C. bubble entirely. and I really like it here. Pittsburgh is such a neat city.
Isn't it?
It really is. There's so much going on. And I am just constantly surprised at how much is happening. The different, God, the inordinate number of networking groups that you can join and meet all different kinds of people. And make those introductions. I have found people in Pittsburgh to be very warm and very welcoming, which I certainly appreciate.
Sure.
The challenge of creating a new professional network and also creating a new social network, I vastly underestimated how hard this would be. And so I have been so pleasantly surprised at how warm and welcoming
That's
people
awesome.
In Pittsburgh have been.
That's
so
awesome.
It's good. I've learned a lot. I still have a lot to learn. And I continue to meet great people and look for as many opportunities as I can.
Keep the, just a little bit of advice, don't mention the Flyers. Keep that to yourself.
That's fine. I couldn't
keep
talk
that,
hockey if you paid
keep that
me.
One to, what professionally brought you to Pittsburgh? What brought you here to Pittsburgh?
I have family here. And I was trying to decide, my lease was up where I was living in Northern Virginia.
Okay.
And I was trying to figure out where to go. It was as simple as that. And I just wasn't really thrilled with my options.
Mm-hmm.
Looking around, talking to my family, talking to friends. My sister-in-law grew up north of Pittsburgh.
Okay.
She and my brother have been here for about, gosh, I think about 12 years now.
Okay.
They moved, after they got married, they moved back here. She got a phenomenal job opportunity. So they've been here. And my brother just, I think he casually threw it out. I don't know how serious he was about it, but he suggested, why don't you move to Pittsburgh? And my brain did not freak out. I always enjoyed being here when we visited mm-hmm. for holidays. Excuse me. Visited for holidays and taking trips. And
okay.
I just thought, you know, this could be a chance to start over, to look for different opportunities. Very disillusioned with DC, as a lot of people are. It's just not even fair to the word dysfunction to say DC is dysfunctional. It's just in an entirely other universe of dysfunction. So I was looking for something different.
That's a wonderful way to put it, though. I mean, you know, that takes some courage. It takes some forward thinking, some creativity to think that, you know, just to come to a new place and so I'm gonna do it here.
Yeah, that's cool. It's been interesting. And as I said, people have been great. The introductions, people. Oh, you're new here. What do you do? Let me introduce you to these three people. And that has just been absolutely phenomenal.
That's how we met.
It is. You know, it is. We sat down at a lunch next to each other. We're introduced. And so now we're here chatting.
That's awesome. Well, we clicked and, you know, you were immediately interesting. You're just you're one of those people that you just have this smile that just welcomes people in. And that's a wonderful thing, you know, and it makes it easier when you're doing something like that, when you're going to a new place and meeting new people, because it is hard.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you can only give that elevator speech so many times before you're like, what in the heck am I doing? You know?
You know, it's been very interesting. I had to develop an entirely new elevator speech, and it took about a month for me to figure that
out.
So in DC, when I tell somebody that I'm a communication consultant, communication strategist, they automatically know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
I didn't even have to tell them what I do. Come to Pittsburgh, and the first person I introduced myself to, I said, well, I'm a communications strategist. They looked at me like I had horns growing out of my head. And I'm sitting there thinking, did I stumble? What, you know, my brain's going, why are they looking at me like that?
Yeah.
And then I found that the conversations I was having, instead of being able to explain what I can do, I was having to explain what that meant.
What it means, right.
So then I had to have a little chat with myself and say, Tui, you can't keep doing it this way. And so I started asking people questions. This is how I'm introducing myself. It's not working. What do you think? How could I do this better? And I had a couple of great conversations and people who are just very willing to work through that process with me. Tell me what it is you do. Give me seven examples of your work, and then let's see what we can come up with. So some really surprising conversations and helping me just really focus in on what's the best way to make that introduction.
Right.
So now I say that I do PR and crisis communications. Most people have an idea what PR is.
Sure.
And when you attach crisis communications, there's a context that's provided.
Right.
People understand what it is. So instead of wasting a couple of minutes of, well, here's what I do, blah, 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 and they lose interest and, you know, I can see their eyes wandering and they're trying to get out of the conversation, we can just get into the conversation of what it is I can do that could help an individual or a company.
Sure.
So I had to make a lot of adjustments in that way. Instead of, I'm going to educate Pittsburgh about what a communications consultant is, it was put back on me. You need to figure out a better way to explain yourself.
Well, it's very perceptive on your part to pick that up, because a lot of people would just keep pushing through. You know, this is what I do. Why don't you understand it?
It just wasn't working.
Right.
It's a learning process. So that's where, you know, so that curiosity, asking questions, and I can't promote myself as an excellent, high quality PR crisis communication specialist if I'm not clearly communicating what it is I do.
You know, that's such a marketable skill. Mm-hmm. What brought you into that? Was that something that morphed through the political thing, or did that bring you into that? How did this all happen?
So what I like to say is that political campaigns are a crisis a day.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to wake up to.
Every day.
And it can range from a bad press cycle. So I was press secretary or communications director, and so I would be intimately involved in trying to figure that situation out. It could be that a surrogate said something inappropriate in a meeting. That gets leaked out to the press, or that gets leaked out to volunteers. There's any number of situations that can happen that can just tank your campaign in a heartbeat. And the other side, your opponent, is aggressively looking for those opportunities. So it's that, you know, hand-to-hand combat as a way of describing it. So me working with the reporters, also working with the rest of the staff to figure out what's going on today? What are we hearing? What are we looking at tomorrow? And then making sure we're continuing the strategy that gets us to victory. So I took that after I left politics and Capitol Hill, I went to work in the private sector for a boutique crisis communications firm.
Okay.
The learning process there was absolutely phenomenal. And so that's a lot of the experience and the knowledge that I'm now using. I've turned it into my own programs, into my own strategies to be able to offer to clients. So one thing, and it's something that I love working with the small to medium size companies. Big companies are great. They usually already have consultants on board.
Yeah, sure.
The small and medium sized companies, they think they can't afford that. But right. I'm one person. They absolutely can afford me. I have very flexible rates. Okay. So it's a process of a crisis assessment. And so it's sitting down. And again, as I always say, I'm going to ask a million questions.
Okay.
And so part of it is figuring out what are the types of crises that this company could wind up in. Mm-hmm. They could be large crises. They could be small crises. But essentially, a crisis is anything that threatens the viability of a company.
Okay.
The goal is to be able to open the shop up tomorrow and continue whatever it is you do. So we have to get you from one side of the crisis to the other. We have to get the company to emerge and have it remain viable. Mm-hmm. It could be battered. It could be bruised. But so long as it's viable, we've achieved our goal. So it's understanding the different types of crises. There's reputational management. Mm-hmm. There's operational management. If it's a customer service type of industry, how are you dealing with customer service? What are your institutional problems? What are the chronic problems? There could be accidents, manufacturing, industry, anything like that. An accident could certainly turn into a crisis. It's taking a step back and assessing, what do you have in place? Do you have the plans? Do you have the tools? Do you know who you're going to contact? The person you call for reputational management within the company, so that chain of command in the company, who you're tapping into for reputational management
right.
could be different for who you're tapping into for an accident or
sure.
for an internal issue with an employee. Anything can snowball into a large crisis that, again, threatens the viability of the company. So it's sitting down. It's developing a level of trust so that executive, so that management, so that rank and file employees are going to give me those honest answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's NDAs at the wazoo, whatever is required.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm never going to say no to any of that, because I need to trust that the company is giving me the correct information and all of the information so that I can then turn around and say, here are the situations that you could face. It could be a regulatory issue. It could be a management issue. It could be really anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, draw something out of a hat that could turn into a crisis. So we come up with the most likely crises, make sure that they have a plan in place if something were to occur. But it's also learning the signs. What are you looking for that could indicate that you have a crisis coming down the path?
Okay.
The best way to handle a crisis is to be prepared when it does happen. So that's what I do.
That's a lot.
That is,
you know,
it's fascinating work as well.
It is fascinating, but that's a lot for you. I mean, it really is. That's a, you know, you've got to do a lot of data collection, a lot of research, and a lot of it has to be intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be able to read people.
Yes.
You know, because somebody can say, you know, well, here's this is our CFO, right? And, you know, you've got to understand that person, because, you know, if a crisis comes around that person, it could go a million different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just look at that person just as the CFO, they've got this degree, they got this experience. But that's a human being, and every human beings are very complex, convoluted creatures.
Oh, we're ridiculous.
You know, we
we are absolutely ridiculous.
That's a story for another day.
Right.
Because we make things harder than they have to be.
I excel at that.
Yeah, well,
it's a talent.
Let me put something to you here, because one of the things that, you know, business today, like it or not, social media is a thing.
It is.
Right? Whether you're using it for your business, you can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
So that opens up, that takes that million different things that could happen and makes it 100 million.
Yes.
Right? So how do you advise your clients? How do you look at social media in a business application?
It's definitely a challenge. You've got to have people on board who can manage your social media. I prefer not to do the daily posting, monitoring, mm-hmm. because that takes away from the strategy. side of what I'm trying to look at. So I'm looking at the 50,000 foot view, but we need people on board who are doing that day-to-day work. And so one thing that I do for clients is to manage that process. Generally, it's going to be a younger employee, maybe somebody a year or two out of college.
Okay.
They're great on social media. That demographic, that age group is phenomenal at social media. But it's helping them understand that social media for the company, for a professional, is very different from what you have done in college, from what you do in your personal life. Right. So it's helping them build and develop judgment so that what they're posting, what they're reading in comments, they know how to interpret it from a professional lens instead of that personal lens of, I want 20,000 likes on TikTok because I've got a great outfit that I'm showing off. That's personal, and if you're going into fashion, that's great. But if you're working for a manufacturing company, that's not what they need for their social media.
Right.
So we talk a lot about developing professional judgment. But it's also understanding the tools. Not every social media platform is the right tool for a company. So it's understanding the platforms. You know, TikTok is huge. Is TikTok the right platform for a company to use? Where are their customers? I've got one client right now, and it's a little frustrating because Facebook is where their customers are.
Right.
And their social media specialist, she wants to expand to other platforms. She's got some great ideas, but that's not where the customers are. And so we have to communicate with the customers where they are.
Sure.
We can't force customers into a platform that they don't want to use or they're not comfortable using.
Right.
But then it's also, what is the right platform to engage in from the company's perspective? You can have certain types of conversations on Facebook that you really can't have on Twitter. So is Twitter the right platform? Or I guess we have to call it X now.
Yes.
Is X the right platform? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So it's never a blanket fill in, you know, it's not a template of you should do this, you should do that. It's really getting into the company, again, asking a gazillion questions. I drive people crazy with all my questions. But that's the only way that I'm going to learn and be able to turn around an individualized plan that says, here's where we are today. We want to get here. What are those steps to get there? And so it starts with understanding the tools, understanding how we use them, and then using them to our best advantage.
Yeah, that's awesome because it's very complicated. You know, like this podcast, for example, I was very surprised. The podcast does much better on LinkedIn than it does on Instagram or Facebook, okay? We have a Facebook page and all these things, but when I share the podcast on my LinkedIn profile, it's just James Proton, this is my LinkedIn, I'll get a couple thousand impressions, I'll get likes and all these things, but it seems like on Facebook, people will go, they don't go to the Facebook page, they go to Spotify and listen, they go to YouTube and they watch, which is great.
Right.
But it's just interesting to me how it's perceived on LinkedIn as opposed to Facebook, because this to me is not business, it's social. It's more, you know, it's a conversation. So I thought that it would be more applicable to Facebook because it's more of a social platform, but it's just the opposite.
I can understand why it's the opposite, though, and it's because I've got a different perspective. For you, this is personal. This is something that you're doing, even though you are doing it in a professional sense. This is also something that you are personally doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in your mind, you're thinking, this has got some personal aspects. Facebook is the more personal platform, so this is the place to share it. But from my perspective, a lot of what I hear on this podcast is some type of professional development. And I look to LinkedIn for that professional development.
Okay.
Twitter X is a cesspool. It has been from the beginning. It's always going to be. But, you know, I'm currently obsessed with where Kate Middleton is, like the rest of social media.
For you, that's awesome.
I find all of that on X, and it is phenomenal. And
I'm
sending links out like crazy to my friends going, oh, wait, where is she today? You know, what did we see today? Who's photoshopping this? You know, so that's what I look at X. But I also find a lot of news on X because reporters are engaging in debates. Mm-hmm. Reporters are posting their links. A lot of government agencies, they're using X. They will still use Facebook. They're having more broad conversations on Facebook. LinkedIn still holds that niche as the professional site.
Right.
TikTok, not a professional site. Facebook, 99% it's pictures of my dog when we're out hiking. LinkedIn is where I'm going to look for different types of learning modules. What are some skills that I would like to learn or I would like to improve on? I look at LinkedIn for that. I look for business connections. I recently reconnected with somebody who I knew, I'm not going to say how many years ago, but I knew a while ago in DC. That's another use for LinkedIn. Yeah. But it really still holds that that position as the professional network.
Right.
And
right.
So when people are looking for professional development, which is where I view this podcast as, I would look for this on LinkedIn as well.
I appreciate that. And you know, our conversation, so you know, we want to tell our guest's personal story, the journey, how, you know, but we also want to make sure that we pay enough attention to, especially if it's an entrepreneur, somebody who's, you know, out there, like self-employed, one person shop. So, and hopefully, maybe you make a connection, somebody sees this and reaches out. So we want to try to touch on both sides of the coin, kind of like a business, but lifestyle as well. So that's an interesting perspective because, you know, again, I'm seeing it from this lens.
Right.
So, yeah, I appreciate that.
Well, and that's, so just that brief conversation, that's part of the value that I can add for clients is that I do have an outside perspective.
Right.
You get into the day in, day out of what's going on in your company, and it's very hard to pull back. So you need somebody with that strategic focus who's looking at 50,000 feet and saying, you know, gosh, I'm really seeing this is a problem. This is a chronic problem, and you're throwing Band-Aids at it. We really need to drill down and fix it.
Yeah.
And then taking steps back and taking steps back until eventually you say, let's get you here. Here's how we can do it.
Yeah. See, like, the first thing I do when I first look at Facebook is to just go on and make sure that none of my knucklehead friends have posted anything inappropriate on my shared
online. That's always a good thing
to
do.
Okay, whoa. But, okay, so this has been great. I can sit and talk to you about this stuff for hours. But what comes next for you? Where are you going from here? You're a Pittsburgher now, so there's no turning back or no going back east.
No, I like it here.
You're here now.
I'm good for
the
long haul.
So once you come here, you can't leave. I don't know if they told you that.
I'm okay with that.
You can't leave.
Yeah.
So what's next?
I don't know. That's a great question, and I don't really have a great answer for it. What I'm doing now, I'm still continuing with TUI Communications.
Okay.
So the crisis assessment, so the long-term strategy with clients. I do freelance reporting for inside sources. We're trying to pick up our Western Pennsylvania reporting.
Okay.
I've been freelancing with them for a while, and it turns out they've got a great reporter in Western PA, and my editor was like, you know, hey, you want to do some more stuff? And I'm going, yes. Yes, I absolutely do.
Absolutely.
So I'm the lead reporter for Inside Sources for the U.S. Senate race. So I'll be focusing on that for the rest of the campaign cycle, but also looking for a lot of Western PA stories. So manufacturing, energy, you know, a lot of energy sector stuff, for lack of a better word, going on out here. So looking at the industry, looking at the companies, looking at their stories. So I do both sides of the notepad anymore. So I do the consulting side, but I'm also doing the freelance reporter side.
For you, that's fascinating. You have a full plate. And honestly, and I mentioned this to you the other day, I think there's some really cool opportunities where what I'm doing in my business as far as, you know, is the marketing and outreach things and what you're doing, there's some opportunities there for us to work together. I think we'll definitely, let's keep that conversation going.
I'd love to. Thank you.
There's some really cool stuff we could do. But in all of the things that you just said.
Yeah.
So.
Recent.
Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. This is a great conversation.
Thanks for
having
me.
It would be. And let's keep in touch and keep going.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you.
Thanks.